Anyway, we will tell you all about that as we go along today. A lot to talk about, but we begin today with your future, your financial future, your security in your older years, your social security, your Medicare. You know, we got this budget deficit thing, and they always are fussing, feuding, fighting, and arguing in Washington. And there are people who are concerned that people are out to grab Social Security and Medicare and just change what is working and change it into something that is not working, which makes absolutely no sense. That's why there's an organization called the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. They are one of the country's most influential senior advocacy and education membership organizations, and they are concerned because some of the changes that Washington is talking about, and not just Republicans, Democrats, even the folks in the White House, are talking about changes, and African Americans are more dependent on the services and benefits of Social Security and Medicare than other groups in the country. And so we've got a great opportunity in our first half hour today. We have on the line Max Richman. Max Richman is the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. He's an experienced guy in Washington. He's been dealing with this since 1989. You probably have seen him on C-SPAN, CNN, MSNBC, even Fox News, CBS, Pacifica Radio Networks. He's been in all kind of congressional town hall meetings all across the country. And if there's an expert on Social Security and Medicare and knowing how to preserve, protect, and defend it, it's Max Richman. And we're honored and privileged to have him on the line. Welcome, sir.
Well, thanks, Amos, for inviting me to be on your program.
So now you must be tired trying to protect this from all of these forces in Washington. What's going on, and is it the budget deficit driving it, or is it people that would just like to blow up Social Security and Medicare as we know it?
Well, first of all, I'm not tired. I'm energized by this, and the answer to your question, it's really both examples you talked about are at play. You mentioned, I was listening to you about people in Washington fussing, feuding, and fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, some of them are also plain lying.
Uh-oh.
I know it's not a delicate word, but there is no connection between Social Security and the budget debate.
No
the
connection.
The budget debt, our huge federal debt, our large annual deficits. Social Security hasn't added a penny to that, but it is being brought up again and again and again as a way to solve some of these problems that it did not create, didn't add a penny to these huge federal to the huge federal debt and the annual deficits.
So Social Security is not it. So that's some of what the vice president calls malarkey.
Malarkey is a good word. I call it malarkey.
Oh, see, this is a G-rated program, so that's our favorite word, malarkey. We know that one doesn't get us in trouble.
Right, but it's also, you know, you mentioned, is it myths about the program and how it's related to the federal debt, or is it about people wanting to blow it up? I do think there are people in Washington, policymakers, politicians, that never really liked the Social Security program. They would like to move people from that kind of a social insurance program to a process where you get your what would be your FICA tax, you invest it, you do whatever you like with it, and you're on your own. And that's a philosophical change. I'm not saying these are bad people, but they approach social insurance in a completely a different way than we do here at the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. So both are at play.
All right, let me ask you this. Okay, so we know that Social Security, the dollars that we all pay in the payroll tax, that's going to keep Social Security solvent. That's a separate part of money. That's not part of the deficit and all this sequestration, all that kind of stuff. What about the Medicare tax that we're paying in withholding? What's the deal with Medicare?
Medicare will run into a solvency problem sooner than Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a much more complicated issue because it is part of our larger health care problem. And rather than having beneficiaries pay more out of their pockets, what we need to do, and the President's Affordable Care Act started us on this path, is to bring some constraint, some control over the overall health care costs. Because the problem really, as I see it, isn't the Medicare program. It's the out-of-control spending on health care costs. And that needs to be addressed. Simply asking seniors to pay more out of their pockets when they're already so many of them on fixed, limited incomes, many of them relying on Social Security for at least 90% of their incomes. Social Security does not really keep up. It has a cost of living adjustment, but it does not keep up adequately with the cost of inflation as it impacts seniors. So both programs are dynamic programs. They've changed dramatically over time. Social Security since 1935, Medicare since the mid-1960s. And whatever changes are made in the future should be made for the sake of improving and expanding and extending the lives of these programs, not solving fiscal problems that the programs were never designed to address.
Let me ask you, has there been any talk as it relates to Medicare? You know, a lot of private companies now, in order to keep the increase in their health insurance premiums to their employees, to keep those increases down, we've got all these little wellness programs, and we got to agree to get our blood pressure checked every year and blood tests every year and all kind of healthy things. And it's like, I tell HR, okay, if this keeps my increase in premiums down, fine, I'll go along and do that. Any talk about doing those kinds of things in Medicare so that those who are on Medicare are encouraged to get annual checkups, to get checked, and if you go through that procedure, then any increases are held to a minimum, if at all?
Well, that's such a good question, Amos. And the fact is, in the president's health care reform law, mm-hmm. Obamacare, if you will, for the first time ever, starting last year, if you are on Medicare, there are numerous preventative screenings and tests available with no, and I repeat, no out-of-pocket costs for the first time ever.
Mm.
The point is to encourage exactly what you were talking about, seniors on Medicare to do what they can in a preventative nature that will save money, save lives, and improve health care costs. These include mammograms, diabetes testing,
right,
colonoscopies, and a whole variety of preventative care screenings and testings that, for the first time, are included in the Medicare benefit package without any upfront out-of-pocket cost. And millions of people are now becoming aware and availing themselves of these benefits. And I have found that a lot of the misunderstanding in the last couple of elections about Medicare being cut, hurting seniors, is really diminishing because Medicare beneficiaries are experiencing firsthand the benefits, and they know that these improvements are valuable to them and are improving their health and saving them money.
239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. We're talking with Max Richmond. He is president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. And see, I knew the minute I said Social Security and Medicare, folks were ready to, you know, ready to call. Let me start today with Sean. Hi there.
Hey, Amos.
Hi.
I just have a question. Who gave the, I guess, the federal government permission to even tap into the Social Security and hold it anyway?
Who gave the federal government permission to do what?
To tap into the Social Security holdings. From what I understand, they're saying that people up there are saying that there's not going to be any Social Security for the future generation.
All right, Max, Sean asked, who gave the federal government permission to tap into the Social Security money? Because he's been told there's not going to be anything left in Social Security when it's his time to collect.
Well, I don't know how old Sean is, but the trustees of Social Security issue a report every spring. And last April, they'll do one again this April, last April they announced that the program is solvent, and that is able to pay everybody entitled to benefits, their full benefits, until the year 2034. And after that, there will be a shortfall of about 20% of what should be paid out in benefits, and we need to address that. But the program is not bankrupt. The program is sound. It has $2.7 trillion in the trust fund. Now, the issue that Sean raised is really one of the worst myths about the program, is that there's no money there. There'll be no money for future beneficiaries. The program, by design, has collected more money in the last 25 or so years than was needed to pay out benefits, so that the money could be put in a fund to be there when the baby boomers, like myself, right, start entering retirement.
Well, let me, Max, ask you this, because one of the myths that's out here is that the federal government can, you know, borrow money from the Social Security piggy bank, use it, and maybe they put a piece of paper in there and say, hey, we owe you an IOU. What's the facts there?
Well, the fact is very different from the myth. This money, this $2.7 trillion that has been collected in the last 25, 30 years beyond what was needed to pay out in benefits, you would not want that sitting in a box. You want it to collect interest.
Right.
So it is invested in the safest, risk-free investment possible, and that's government bonds, treasury bills.
Okay.
So these aren't, you know, as you call them, these aren't little slips of paper with Amos Brown or Max Richmond written on them. They're backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, just like any government bond or treasury bill would be. And in fact, I have found it useful to use this as an example to show that this is real money, real interest, real trust fund. Last year, because of high unemployment, less money was paid in through payroll tax than was needed to pay full benefits for the year 2012. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the interest on the bonds, that were held by the U.S. government for Social Security, not only made up the difference, and everybody got their full benefits,
right, but
added to the trust fund.
Oh.
The interest on those bonds made up the difference, and it's been very rare that not enough money has been taken in payroll tax to pay full benefits. But you had high unemployment, less money being paid in payroll taxes because of that, and yet the interest on the bonds accrued to the Social Security program was used to make sure all benefits were paid, and money was added to the trust fund. So to me, that's a very good example to show that this is real. It's real money. It's real. It's real revenue. It's not just little scraps of IOU paper that we're talking about.
All right. Let me go to Jerry at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. Good afternoon. How are you?
Fine.
This is what I want to say about Social Security. Because we talk about Social Security like the government pays into it and then we're taking from them. But working class people pay into Social Security. We've been paying this. They've been taking this out of our checks forever. I worked 38 years. They took it out of my check. Now, I'm a recipient of SSD. Isn't that what you get when you work and then you can't work anymore, SSD?
Yes, disability.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm a recipient of that. But mm-hmm. I paid into that. Into that insurance for 38 years, so that if any time in my life it came a time I could not work, I would receive a check. I got a statement every year showing me what I would get and everything. So now the government is saying, like, well, we're going to take this back to make the government deficit better, but this is not your money. It's not a pension. It's not a 401k. You didn't contribute when I contributed. people around the nation or the country contributing to this fund, and so these funds were supposed to be available to them if something happened to them. Now what has happened is all those things you've been doing all these years as far as medical care or even like taking our children, putting them on Ritalin, has come back to bite you in your behind. Because now we got children on Social Security. We got non-working folks on Social Security because their minds are messed up. So that at first nobody was really on it, but now all of a sudden you need it. People are really on it. So now we're saying, let's take this back. But you can't do that because there's really not money you paid in anyway.
All right, let me
am I not right? Am I not correct about that?
All right, let me let Max Richmond respond because you brought all. That's why we have Max, the smartest talk show audience in the whole country.
Well, she's right on target.
Mm.
I have tried to steer the conversation in a way that the term is not entitlements, but earned benefits, just what the caller was talking about. Mm. She paid in for 48 some years and earned this benefit. And it defeats our cause. And I'm talking about those folks who really care about Social Security, really care. Defeats our cause when the conversation describes it as an entitlement. Because, you know, when you hear entitlement, you think you deserve this because you're living and breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. You deserve to get these benefits because you paid for them your working life. So she's exactly right.
Is it also that there is some confusion because you can be a child and get Social Security benefits under SSI? And that confuses people who think that Social Security is for retirees.
Well, I try to, whenever I can, talk to younger folks and explain to them that Social Security, yes, it's for retirees when you reach eligibility age,
mm-hmm.
but it's for families.
Mm-hmm.
It's an insurance. You know, the term FICA stands for Federal Insurance Contribution Act. And this program funds old age survivor and disability benefits. Almost 30% of Social Security benefits go to non-retired workers. Children, like the example you just gave, there are about 3 million children that get Social Security benefits because a working parent, became disabled or died, and they're eligible to receive benefits. So are survivors, spouses who survive a partner who has died or become disabled. So this is insurance for families, and it's for retirees, but it's also for most people who are younger don't realize the benefit that's there with Social Security until something bad happens in the family.
Then someone will
remind them, you should call Social Security.
Does it also fit, let's just say for the sake of the argument, somebody does no work and they don't marry somebody who is employed. So theoretically, when that person becomes of retirement age, there is no Social Security for them because they've not paid into it.
Right, exactly. You have to. You're required to pay a minimum of 40 quarters,
mm-hmm.
which is 10 years of contribution to get into the program.
So, by definition, that's not an entitlement.
Exactly. I've never thought of it that way, but I'm going to from now on. That's such a perfect example. If you don't pay into it, you don't get it.
No, but
if you pay into it, you do get it.
And Max,
that's a very good example.
And Max, we've had listeners who have brought that up in conversation on this program over the years. And just like the previous caller, I paid into it. Good common sense out here in the Midwest. We got good common sense out here.
Well, I grew up in Omaha, so I got some of that too.
239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons Davis. We'll take a break. We'll get more of your calls. This is your opportunity to find out the facts of how can we preserve Social Security and Medicare. When we come back, we're going to ask Max Richmond, the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, what people here in Indianapolis, what
you listening can do to help preserve it and keep these crazy people from taking it away. It's Afternoons with Amos on a Friday, brought to you by the Indiana Civil Rights Commission.
All right, welcome back. We're with Max Richmond. He is the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Let me go to the phones. And Mary, hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Amos.
How are you?
Fine. I have a question for the gentleman that's on the program. I'm a retired veteran, and I also work part-time. But my question is, I have TRICARE insurance. Now, I'm finding out that I have to take Medicare Part A and Part B in order to keep my TRICARE coverage because I'm going to switch to TRICARE for life. Who set this up? Why do I have to have Medicare? They tell me I have to have two insurances. So I'd like to know why.
That's a good question.
You know, can you repeat it? I had a hard time hearing her.
Yeah, Mary, what insurance do you have now?
I have TRICARE, which is through the military.
So I'm retired. Okay, so you have a health care plan because you're a veteran, correct?
Correct.
But and Medicare is saying you got to have Part A and B too, or get rid of the military part.
No, I can keep the military because it's going to switch from regular TRICARE to TRICARE for life.
Okay, TRICARE
but
for
I
life.
I have to have Medicare Part A and B in order to keep my TRICARE for life. They telling me I have to have two coverages.
Okay, she has.
Well, the Medicare part. Medicare, you know, TRICARE, I'm not an expert on TRICARE, and TRICARE for life is a little more complicated, but the Medicare Part A would not cost, there's no premium, there's no monthly charge for Part A. It is automatic. If she paid while working, she would have to pay just as she pays payroll tax for Social Security. There's a Part A 1.45% now by the employee, and the same for the employer. So that's automatic. When you reach eligibility for Medicare, your Part A is automatic. You don't have to pay any premiums for it. It's the Part B that you would have to pay a monthly premium, but the TRICARE that she has, I think she has that in place of any Medicare Part B.
All right, you might.
No, they told me I have to have both Medicare A and B in order to.
No, are you talking about B or D?
B is
A and B.
Oh, B is in boy. B is in boy, right?
Right.
If I don't take this. Yeah.
Then I'm going to lose my medical coverage with TRICARE for life.
Who's telling you this? TRICARE?
Yes.
All right. I tell you what I want you to do, because I know they know about this. Give Congressman Carson's office a call.
All right.
Because they deal with Social Security, Medicare, and veterans every day.
All right.
And you hit all three of that trifecta.
Okay.
And the congressman's number is
283-6516. All right.
Tell him you talk to me live on the air, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. 239-1310. Is part of also the problem, Max Richmond, that this stuff has gotten more complicated than a college entrance exam?
It has. And that was that's a great suggestion you had. Congressman Andre Carson, his office does a great casework. And somehow, I think there's a miscommunication or maybe just plain misinformation from what I was hearing your caller say. So the best way is to go through it with someone, and hopefully in person if she can do that.
All right. Let me go back to the phones. And Greg, hi there.
How you doing today, gentlemen?
We're fine.
Okay, I got a question with the Social Security part.
Uh-huh.
A, you know, when you retire, you get when you get a certain age, you're supposed to get it. And they talk about raising it up. You know, a lot of these jobs, they get rid of people before they even get to that age. So what is it now, and what's your opinion about them raising it up or lowering it?
That's a great question. As Social Security wants to raise the retirement age when your benefits kick in and businesses are trying to get rid of people over the age of 55, is that a growing problem as you see it, Max Richmond?
It's a growing threat. Actually, Social Security is not trying to raise the age. They just do whatever the law, they administer the law. But there are members of the Congress who are very, very interested in having the age for receiving benefits go up. Currently, they're going up on a formula that means by the year 2027, everybody will have to be 67. That would be the age for receiving benefits. It's going up some months, some years 1 month, some years 2 months. But it has gone up from 65 to 66 and will go to 67. Now, there are folks who think it should go to 70. There are folks who think it should be indexed and maybe go beyond 70. That is, I think that's a huge mistake. First of all, as you just pointed out, Amos, in order for that to be a plausible answer, there has to be a job. You can't just say let someone work longer. They got to have a job to work longer, right?
Right.
And there aren't that many jobs, especially for someone who's 66, 67, 68, 69. That's not the best prime years to find a job. And you know what I found so disheartening about 3 weeks ago? There's a business interest a group here in Washington. It's called the Business Roundtable.
Yeah, I heard of it.
Okay, it's headed by former governor of Michigan, former Governor Engler.
Yeah.
And they issued a report, and their recommendation for extending the long-range solvency of Social Security and Medicare was raise the age for Medicare to 70, raise the age for Social Security to 70, and that'll take care of it. And, you know, I was interested in who was on this business roundtable, so I did a little research and found the members of the executive committee.
Right.
Their salaries, the lowest salary there are about 15 of them, of the members of the executive committee of the business roundtable, the lowest salary was about $5 million a year.
Ooh.
The highest was about $55 million a year. And, you know, if they have to wait another year to get Social Security, doesn't matter to them because they're not going to be living on Social Security. They're going to have a very good package that they will have when they retire. And to me, it was such an elitist way to think about what average people need in our country. And, in fact, it reminded me very well-known Queen of France a few centuries ago when she was told her subjects didn't have bread. And you remember what she said, right?
Yeah, let them eat cake.
Let them eat cake.
We're with Max Richmond, who is the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. How are you on time?
I'm all yours.
Okay. All right. I never want to get in trouble with PR folks. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Is part of the discussion to make sure that Social Security and Medicare are strengthened? Right now, if you make above a certain amount of money, you don't have to pay the FICA tax or the Medicare tax. Is there any talk of raising that so some of these people that are making $1 million, $2 million pay a little bit more into Social Security and Medicare?
Well, we're talking about it, and you're talking about it, but, you know, it hasn't reached a critical mass yet, apparently. Just to set the record straight, Medicare is different. Medicare Part A, the part I talked about, where you, when you're working, you pay 1.45% as an employer, and the same for the employee, into the Medicare Part A trust fund, which funds the hospital part of Medicare, the hospital part. There's no cap on that.
Okay.
You pay that no matter what your income is. There used to be a cap, but about 25, 30 years ago, it was raised and then eliminated altogether.
So Donald Trump pays the Medicare tax on the gazillions that he makes.
Well, on wages.
On wages,
You know, that's a whole other topic of discussion.
But I'll use the example.
What about unearned income, which, as you know from the presidential campaign, Governor Romney had huge amount of income that was unearned in capital gains and dividends, that Medicare tax does not apply to that.
Okay.
It's only on wages.
On wages.
So
okay.
You can be sure that Donald Trump isn't just getting wages that he pays this on. He's figured out ways to avoid that. But your point about Social Security, obviously you know that there's a cap. It goes up a little bit each year. It's $113,700 this year, 2013. And beyond that, you don't pay any more FICA tax. You know that. I know that. A lot of people don't know that because they've never reached that level, and they just assume that you pay on your wages because they've never reached the cap to see all of a sudden they don't have to pay. So in other words, if you make $113,000 a year or if you make $113 million a year, you're going to pay the same into Social Security, and that needs to be changed. You could, if you eliminated the cap altogether, you would not have any more discussion about Social Security solvency in the future. You would have taken care of it.
All right. Let me go to May at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi there. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I'm trying to ask the question concerning Social Security. I'd like to know, I've been married for over 60 years. And if my husband and I have worked for almost 30 years, and I'd like to know why they take, if he passes away, then am I entitled to his Social Security as a widow, or where does my money go that I have paid into Social Security?
You know, that's a great question. With two earning households, I know she would, because you said Max Richmond earlier. This is like survivor's benefit. So, you know, if her husband passes away, we hope he has a long and healthy life, she would be entitled to benefits. Is it based upon his income, her income, or both?
It's really both. It's a formula. She does not automatically switch from her income, from her benefits to his. Mm-hmm. But there's a formula that would allow her to get some benefit if she has become widowed, besides her own earnings. I mean, it depends on what her work history is.
Right.
Does she have Social Security on her own, and how much is it, and how much was the benefit of her husband? So it isn't the same amount for everybody. In other words,
all right,
there is a benefit.
All right, let me go back to the phones and Anonymous. Hi there.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. What's up?
I'm going to tell you how to fix that thing.
Okay.
This is what you do from this day forward.
Okay.
Everybody that does not pay into Social Security is not entitled to Social Security. So that means that even if you have sick kids, if you have kids that have a learning disorder, you know, you don't get paid for that anymore. Because that's not what the disability was originally designed for. And the benefit says you have to work. The gentleman said you have to work the 40 quarters.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't work the 40 quarters, that's an automatic disqualifying factor for Social Security. For Social Security disability. Now I'm just talking about disability. That way you're not spending out so much money in this benefit. But people who work for it, and if they're medically disabled, they will be entitled to it. And
right.
Then as far as Social Security,
mm-hmm.
when a person dies, they will be entitled to benefits. Their children will be entitled to benefits, but not all their children. There will be one payment paid out for survivor's benefit. Not every child will get a check, but that one household will get a check. That way, see, you just got to cut back on how you're spending. It's not cut out programs. Cut out how you're spending on the program.
Let me ask a question. What if the program is solvent? Why are you cutting back?
Well, obviously, it can't be that, or we wouldn't be crying about it.
Well, let me just say, some people are crying. You know the term crocodile tears. That's, you know, some people are crying about it, but it's not because it's really in trouble. It's because they want to use. The money that's there. But you know, the caller raises some good points. I don't agree with some of what she has said, because I do think the program, she's right, the program has changed over time, and I think in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
If you if you are committed to Social Security insurance for families, then you want it to be there, whether you worked your 40 quarters or not, if you as a bread earner die or become disabled. For example, if you are 27 years old, mm-hmm. roughly,
right.
and a worker married with two children, you have right now about $500,000 in life and disability insurance combined for your family. If you die before the 40 quarters, because you're in the program, or you become disabled. So it's insurance. It's not just there when you've worked your 40 quarters or your 40 years. It's there as insurance. And I think that's an important attribute of the program, especially when we're trying to get younger people to understand the value of it as insurance for them, as well as a plan to take care of their needs, their basic needs, when they reach retirement age.
Let me ask this. Why isn't Social Security talking about their benefits? You know, there are other government programs. They'll go out and get some young Hollywood star to go around and talk about the importance of this program or that program. Why isn't Social Security selling itself?
Well, you know, Amos, they don't have any Hollywood stars, but they used to have a program years ago where Social Security officials from their branch offices would go into high schools,
right.
and talk to high school students, juniors and seniors, about Social Security, how it worked, the benefits were for disability, survivors, retirement, and why it was a valuable program.
Mm-hmm.
And they just cut back on the funding for that years ago. But I think it's a great idea. You know, we're the second largest senior lobbying group in the country, but we don't have the capacity to do something like that on a huge scale. But I have actually recommended this to some senior members of the U.S. Senate Appropriations Committee. When they look at the budget for next year for Social Security, at least I suggested try it once again as a pilot,
mm-hmm.
in a few places, and see what the results are. Because, you know, let's be honest, it's the people on Social Security. They love the program. It's been there for them. They count on it. But it's the younger people that are skeptical about the program.
And when I say younger people, not just people that are in 20s, people in their 40s don't understand it. Before I take a break, Max Richmond, what can listeners do to help preserve their Social Security and Medicare and make sure that it's there for their kids and their grandkids?
Well, we have a lot of information and a lot of ways they could get involved through phone calls that we can patch them through to their member of Congress, through letter writing, postcards, petitions. And the best, easiest way for folks to reach us would be our 800 number.
Okay.
And that's 1-800-966-1935, the year Social Security became law. So it's easy to remember, 1-800-966-1935.
239-1310 is our number, 239-1310. We go back to the phones. And Janice, hi there.
Yes, good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
I have a question. I would like to get early retirement. I'll be 62 next 2014. But I have a student loan, and I was wondering if the student loan is like maybe $8,000 or $9,000. And I want to know that if I get that early retirement, do they take half or?
You know, I don't know that. I've never confronted that. But I would be glad to get the answer for you if you tell me how I can contact you. I'll get back to you by Monday.
All right. I tell you what. So Janice, let me make sure I understand it. You still owe on a student loan, correct?
Right.
Are you still making payments on the student loan, or you ain't paid on it in a while?
I'm in default right now.
You're in default.
I lost a job because of the over 55 thing.
I got it. Are they taking away, are they seizing your income tax refund?
I don't get, no, I haven't been working since 2010.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
So there's nothing to seize.
All right.
And
right.
I can't pay, you know, I'm.
You raise a couple good questions, and you know if you take Social Security early, the amount of your monthly benefit is reduced than if you wait. Okay, I tell you what I want you what I want you to do, Janice. I want you to hold on, and Chris, who you talked to when you called me, will take your name and number off the air, and then we will email that. Mr. Richmond, we will email that to Brad on your staff.
Well, that's a good plan, and I just don't know the answer there.
Hold on a second, Janice. You were saying something, and while Mr. Richmond was talking, say it again, Janice.
I said I was wondering if this is something I also could go to Andre Costa.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But we're going to do it both ways. And Max Richmond, you were saying.
I was saying that this has nothing to do with Social Security, but I have known of cases where there were very long outstanding student loans, and there's a and I'll get it for the caller.
Yeah.
There is a number to call in Washington, and there are instances where all or part of those loans can be forgiven, and it depends on a lot of the circumstances in play. But I can get your caller in touch with the proper office here in Washington.
All right, what I'm going to do is take a break because I hear some little ones in the background on our caller. We'll get the information about Janet. We'll come back with our remaining moments with Max Richmond. He is the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Medicare and Social Security. It needs to be there for me and all of you. It's After News with Amos on a Friday.
239-1310. 239-1310. It's After News with Amos. We're with Max Richmond, president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Back to the phones and Claire. Hi there.
Hi. I worked at 20 some years and I became disabled like 2001.
Yeah.
And I was concerned about my future. Will I be able to get in a Social Security or not?
You worked for 20 years, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and you currently are not working, correct?
Yes.
Have you tried to apply for Social Security?
I get that.
Oh, okay. Then Max Richmond, she'll get regular Social Security, correct?
When she, I don't know, how old is the caller?
How old are you, Claire?
47.
Okay, it's going to be a while.
It's going to be a while. She has to reach, the earliest would be 62.
So do I get it or not?
Yes, when you reach age 62.
I still get Social Security.
Right.
Oh, okay, thanks.
In fact, Claire, you can call Social Security, and they can at least tell you the amount of the, if you were getting it right now, what the benefit would be.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right, appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's After News with Amos, Max Richmond. How is the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare funded?
Well, it's funded exclusively by our membership. We have over 3 million members and supporters around the country in every corner of America, and they pay $12 a year to become members, and that's we don't sell anything, we don't have any discounts. We're solely working in the best interests of our members, and that's the only source of our revenue.
Is the Obama administration doing all it can do to defend Social Security and Medicare?
Well, that's a hard. I can't really answer.
Okay.
I would do more. Let me say it that way.
Okay.
I would say things differently. I wouldn't leave the door open to issues that in my opinion, could hurt beneficiaries. So far, so good.
Mm-hmm.
We got through this the fiscal cliff that went on from November and December, and we lobbied to keep Social Security cuts from out of that deal, and we succeeded. We lobbied against raising the Medicare eligibility age in that negotiation, and we succeeded. And we lobbied to have the payroll tax holiday expire because we thought it was hurting the program in the long run as a precedent, and we won on that. So so far, so good.
Let me ask you, on we hear about all this these cuts, these draconian cuts that could come if Congress and the president can't agree on anything. Do all those automatic cuts affect Social Security and Medicare?
No, they do not.
They do not.
When that deal was reached, and it goes back to the 2011 rate increase on the debt limit as a incentive to work out long range cuts, these were put in place because it was thought no one would like these automatic cuts, and they would rather have a deal put together that was more of an approach using a scalpel than an axe. But certain things were exempt from these automatic cuts. Social Security is exempt, and Medicare is exempt in terms of what beneficiaries would have to pay. Providers, medical providers, which would include everybody, they are subject to a reduction up to 2%.
All right, let me go quickly to John. John, you got about a minute. What's up?
I'm calling because I've been trying to get Social Security. I got congestive heart failure, and I've been trying to get Social Security since 2005.
So you've been trying to get disability, correct?
Yeah.
How many times have you applied?
Three.
Three?
I'm waiting on a decision now.
All right. Max Richmond, when you talk to Americans about Social Security and everything, you get that complaint, concern?
I do. It's a long process. The caller may have been denied. He may have appealed. Some of these appeals take a year and a half or so. I know the Social Security Administration has done everything possible to shorten the time from when you apply to get a decision on a disability claim, and also to shorten the time of the appeals. But they're strapped for staff, and they've made improvements, but there still is a long wait, and I do hear it all the time.
All right, appreciate it, John. Let me go to Ramona at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi there.
We got about a minute.
Okay, my question is, does a person who stays on a job, say like 35 or 40 years on the same job, do they get more than someone who has had several jobs, you know, maybe change jobs every 2 or 3 years to go for something better and pay more?
What a great question, Max Richmond.
No, it could affect a private pension or 401k. It might have some impact on that. But as far as Social Security, that's portable from one job to another.
And could it affect the size of the benefit? In other words, if they started 30 years ago making minimum wage and now they're making a decent salary, they would end up with maybe more benefits than if they stayed the minimum.
That wasn't her question. She was your benefit. There's a relationship between how much you there's a relationship between the amount you get and what you put in.
Okay.
And actually, it's in terms of percentage, the lower income folks get a better, it's called a rate of return, than the higher income.
Ah.
But it has nothing to do with going from one job to another. It just has to do, it wouldn't matter if you stayed in one job as the callers asked, for 35 or 40 years, or you had four jobs, each of them 10 years. The salary the wages you were making would be relevant, but the fact that you go from one job to another has no bearing.
All right, Vanita will be our last caller with Max Richmond of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Vanita, you got about a minute.
Okay, hi. My question was, how come if you work over the years and you get Social Security that your spouse income would affect your Social Security income, like they may want to cut it or whatever, because I thought that money was yours? And the other question is, I just heard him tell the lady she had to be 62 or something like that to get Social Security. But I know they give it to you if you're disabled.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you get the other income, the SSI or the other income she was talking about?
SSI is the same as the disability. Okay. But the regular Social Security you can get as early as 62, but it's a reduced benefit.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay, what about that cutting your income if because of your spouse or whatever?
Cutting, go ahead.
If you are married, your total, if you are married, you're getting a benefit and your husband gets a benefit, you will get a dollar amount, and again, it varies on what each person's benefit would be, but it is always less than the combined benefit of the two folks. In other words, if you were getting $500 a month and your husband were getting $1,000 a month, together you'd be getting $1,500 a month, and upon his death, you would get less. It would not be $1,500. It would be any exact amount. I couldn't say. It would depend on a number of factors. But you would get less than the combined amount. That's always the case.
All right.
Oh, okay. Because I never understood that. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Again, if you want more information about the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, they're old fashioned. They got a website, a great website at www.ncpssm.org. That's ncpssm.org. But they're also old fashioned and they believe in the toll free number. That number is 1-800-966-1935, 1-800-966-1935, 1-800-966-1935. Max Richmond, we want to thank Brad Wright on your staff for reaching out to us. If he hadn't reached out to us, we wouldn't have known about you and would have had such a great time
on
Friday.
Well, he's sitting right across from me. I'll make sure he knows that you value his efforts to get me on your program.
And you guys got the rain right now, right? The blizzard-geddon is missing y'all, right?
Absolutely. We don't even have any rain. No, cloudy, but no rain and no snow to shovel.
Because, you know, just a threat of snow, they would have closed Washington today. Max Richmond.
Oh, yeah, just talking about it. Yep, absolutely.
Max Richmond.
You know, we can't drive here in snow.
You got that right. Max Richmond, thanks very much for being with us, though. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime.